And I'm Tay, Eric Taylor. Come enjoy the fun. It's a Sports Friday, ladies and gentlemen. Give us a ring, 718-664-9098. Like always, you can check out our website, rayandtaytoday.com. You can send us your emails, your predictions, your whatever you want to do, your gripes, your arguments. We love it all at rayandtaytoday@gmail.com. Also, you know, we get a lot of interaction with you guys on Twitter. We've been having a lot of interaction with the Maryland Terrapins, my alma mater, and the Yankees, and, you know, college football. So, you know, let's talk it on Twitter, Facebook as well. We love it when the fans are interactive with us. So thank you for that. And, Ray, let them know how this super-duper last weekend in Major League Baseball is going to go down.
Well, we got a lot to talk about on this show. So first we're going to go and talk about the player of the year in golf. We're going to talk about NBA training camp just opens with a couple of things that are going on in the world of basketball. We have a lot of basketball coming, so all you guys that want to listen to some hoops, stick with us. We're also going to talk about these MLB playoff races. Looks like it's a dogfight both in the National League and in the American League. In the National League, it's for home field for that one playoff game, and there's three teams fighting for two spots in the American League. And then we're going to look at college football. We've got four top 25 games where both teams are ranked in the top 25. And then, of course, if it's Friday, we're going to be talking NFL. So we've got NFL action going on. This is week four already. Wow, we're almost a quarter of the season done in NFL.
I hate to hear that.
So fast. So we're going to preview five games in the NFL for you. We'll talk some fantasy. We'll talk sleepers. We'll talk people you need to have on your roster. And then we're going to give you a segment. We're going to bring back a segment by popular demand, You're Not Ready. So Ray and Tay are going to give you two players that you might not be ready for. And we're going to tell you to look out for this player. This player might do some big things this weekend. So
definitely. Let's
get into it. So,
well,
your boy,
hit him up, man.
Tigre.
Who, El Tigre? Is I was going to say, who got
El Tigre,
it? Let the audience know. Hot off the presses,
he's
right?
He's a player of the year. He won five times, and he is player of the year for the 11th time on the back of his five big wins and his number one ranking in the world. So the question
no
majors. So that's the thing. No majors, right? Phil Mickelson won couple of majors. There's other people that were in the hunt because of their better performance in the majors. So kudos to Tiger. I guess if it were any other golfer, you'd say absolutely. Tiger you just feel like Tiger's on another level. And I'm sure Tiger's not all that happy with winning five. He'd take one major over those five other tournaments. But you know what? He was consistently, I guess, the best golfer this year. He just didn't do it on Saturdays and Sundays of the majors. But
right, and it doesn't seem like it, though. It's funny, even when you say that, five wins, no major wins, and consistently the best golfer, it doesn't feel like that. You sort of feel different things with Adam Scott, Mickelson, different guys. But, you know, look, the stats are what they are. You know, he did it. He didn't win the FedEx Cup, but hey, overall it's a good year, and what, he's not going anywhere, so he'll be back next year. Maybe he'll be completely healthy and maybe no nagging injuries, and we'll see what, you know, how it all you know, goes down. We didn't hear anything from the young guy, though. Your boy Rory, he sort of disappeared this year. Everybody was hyping him up to be Tiger's,
you
know.
Yeah, he had a bad year. That's the thing about golf is that not only are you competing against everybody else, but you're competing against yourself. That sport is so mental, and it's so psychological, and you can just, once you start going bad, you can just quickly have a bad year. You know, if you start out in the first few tournaments, you can spin out of control real fast.
Yeah, no, definitely. Well, speaking of real fast, the perfect segue, as Ray said it, and it's going to start soon. We have a week from Saturday, you're going to have preseason basketball. Training camps opening up today and tomorrow all over the NBA. Derrick Rose is back saying, hey, I'm healthy 100%, still the best player in the league in his mind. And I'm like, whoa. But it's just going to be fascinating. I mean, obviously the Knicks, you know, let's talk about some of these moves. But they sort of let go of Glenn Grunwald, their president and GM, and hired or rehired sort of Steve Mills, who's, you know, been in the building for a long time. And, you know, I guess we'll see what happens. I mean, was it the Bargnani trade that got Glenn Grunwald fired? You know, I mean, I don't know, because to me it's sort of weird that, you know, he's putting together the team and then before the season starts, he's gone. So who knows what's going on with Dolan and in that building. And I guess they sort of signed, they're bringing guys in the training camp, but it looks like maybe their 15th roster spot might go to Cole Aldridge, who used to be the backup center for your boys, the Thunder. You know, and some other veteran moves. What did you think about, like, someone like Sam Young, who's played some good playoff minutes, going to the Spurs, the Clippers getting Lou Amundson, who, you know, can play some good power forward minutes. Do you like sort of like these deep bench guys that, you know, obviously, you know, in San Antonio, Sam Young will play because he always gives his guys rest. But I don't know. What do you think about stuff like those moves?
They're all fine. I don't think any of these moves are going to make or break anybody. I mean, I think it's just roster building. And at the end of the day, it's sort of insurance against injuries. But
right.
I don't think any of these guys right now, any moves that were made this week, so whether it's Sam Young or Cole Aldridge.
Or even Dwayne Jones, Utah, almost forgot
Dwayne
him.
Jones,
yeah.
None of these moves are going to make a difference unless there's an injury. So we'll see. I mean, look, it's way early. Training camps haven't even started. So we'll see. Excited about this new basketball season. Excited to see Derrick Rose come back. Excited to see if the Pacers are for real. Excited to see if and when Kobe can come back. You know, I wish him first get yourself healthy. Want to see if these Heat can three-peat. I want to see if these Spurs have one more year in them. How the Rockets look now with their you know, Twin Towers. Obviously, they're different, you know, different size. But obviously,
So are you excited? Speaking of big guys, are you excited about the new, one of the new owners of the Sacramento Kings, Shaquille O'Neal, and they just extended our boy DeMarcus, I'm not a knucklehead, Cousins. What do you think about that? And Shaquille's like, hey, you know, I'm gonna make this place jumping and popping again. You know,
I used to call them the Sacramento Queens. But now I'm calling them the Sacramento Kings, and I'm going to take DeMarcus Cousins under my wing and hopefully get the knucklehead
maybe
out.
Maybe Shaq can get to him. Maybe Shaq can get to him. That might be what
maybe
he needs. You know?
Hey,
maybe Shaq's
player.
Got the touch like Magic, too, like Magic with the Dodgers and maybe Shaq with the Kings. Maybe he can, you know, turn them around. Look, we got plenty of time to get in the NBA. It's going to be fun or whatever, but it's really, really time. These are the last three games of the season, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Major League Baseball, 162-game marathon. Before we talk about the playoffs, let's talk about one of the best sports moments in history, and not just baseball, but just in sports history. Tell me about the chills that you felt last night when Andy Pettitte and Derek Jeter at Yankee Stadium for the last time and for the first time ever, two players, right, go out to take the ball from Mariano Rivera the last time he pitches at Yankee Stadium. It was
so
awesome.
I have to admit, I was outside at a bar so that I could watch the football game. And I also wanted to see the baseball game. So luckily that they had the two TVs back-to-back, right?
Mm.
So the game was a blowout, 4-0.
Yeah.
Mariano comes in the eighth with one out in the eighth. And I don't – two outs, sorry, in the eighth.
Yeah.
So I don't know if he had said this, but then I said to myself, wait a minute. If he's coming out, if they're bringing Mo in with two outs in the eighth, then they're going to pull him out with two outs in the ninth because they want him to get a standing ovation. So I get that. They didn't want him to just do a ninth inning.
And he got them out of a jam because there was a runner on, what, first or
right,
second?
Right, there's two runners on, I think.
Yeah, that's right. So he got him out of that jam.
He got him out of a jam. So that was nice, and I think Girardi did it with style. And then sending Pettit and Jeter out to get him, that was great.
What a moment.
And then they said they hugged it out for 29 seconds, and he was crying.
It was incredible.
And
standing ovation.
I didn't expect Mariano to be that emotional, but, you know, it was a weird kind of circumstance, right? He was being pulled out in the ninth, which he's never pulled out in the ninth unless he's blown a save and they're trying to save his arm for the next day. And with Pettit and Jeter getting him, I'm sure he didn't expect that. You could tell the reaction on his face. He's like, wow. At first, he looked like, what? And then he was like, this is kind of cool. Like, my God,
well,
the guys that I've been with for 19 years.
And
Pettit
said he
didn't
think he would have that much emotion. And he said Mariano just grabbed him and gave him the biggest hug and had tears in his eyes. And Pettit was like, I just hugged him back, you know. I thought it was just – it was poetry. It was sort of the Yankees in terms of, like, what you think of the Yankees and this team and this era and all the World Series and Joe Torre and just the guys. It was class. It was total class. It wasn't the Dodgers, you know, how they celebrated in the Diamondbacks pool. It was the Yankees. It was class. And so we all tip our hats to Mariano. I mean, what, 314 saves at home, 652 saves. He's the GOAT. You know, we've spoken about this before, and we'll probably have to honor him in, like, a Hall of Fame Friday when we talk about some, you know, some of the Baseball Hall of Fame guys. But he's going in, I would think, first ballot, if not second ballot.
Oh, for
but,
sure.
You know,
no, he'll be a first ballot Hall of
Famer. I hope, yeah. I mean, but it just – it gives you chills because, you know, and I like the fact, look, they end on the road to Houston, which is kind of weird, right? You know, sort of fake American League team now. But they – you know, Mariano might play center field. You know, it's a dream of his. You know, he loved to do it. And Girardi was like, hey, you know, I might make it happen. So, hey, kudos to the Yankees. It wasn't the greatest season, you know. I mean, I think they got to sign Cano. And I think that they, you know, they're going to have to find a way
we'll
to
talk about
bounce,
that. But I'm
back.
Not sure. I could let Cano go. I'll be honest with you.
I can't. I can't.
Not for
I mean,
30,
I can't
not
do
for
10 years.
Million.
No, I can't do 10 years. That's got to stop. Alex Rodriguez, you know, Pujols, those big. I mean, I can do 6. I can't do a 10-year contract anymore.
No,
I can't.
And if he insists on it, then he's got to go. But the thing is, nobody else will give him 10 years. Certainly not 10 years, $30 million. They'll give him 10 years.
Did you see the Cubs
20.
Going after him?
You know what? I don't think so. I don't think that.
Well, Theo's more
anybody
prudent,
wants
probably.
To give him 10 years. What's that?
No, Theo Epstein's probably a little bit more prudent.
Yeah, people will
yeah,
come
he,
at him strong for 5 or 6 years. I don't think anybody after what happened to Pujols. I don't think anybody will go after him for 10 years. And oh, by the way, he plays second base, right? He doesn't play shortstop.
They tend to break down earlier.
He doesn't
yeah.
pitch. He doesn't play center field, you know, it's an important position, but it's not a critically, you know, it's not a critically important position. So to me, Robinson Cano, maybe it's just negotiating stance, but I think he'll come in with 5 or 6 years, you know, 25, 26, 27 million, somewhere in there, and that's it. He's not going to get his 10. If the Yankees are smart and they have enough Alex Rodriguez history.
Jay-Z, Rock Nation, Rock Nation Sports.
I thought Jay-Z's thing was going to be, you know what, we're not going to kill the teams because we can get them their money off the field. So they don't have to be, so sort of the Cruz model.
I bet this is leaking out just as sort of some leverage so that they could wind up coming back to New York with just, you know, maybe it's 6 or 7 years with just higher money. I just think that they're probably putting this out as like, hey, this is our starting point. We're going to go ridiculous, and then we'll come back to normal. But let me ask you this, leaving that alone, because we'll get to that more, but talking about ridiculous. So you mentioned the NL. They're basically three games, Pirates, Reds, see who, you know, gets home, whoever wins the series for the wild card in the NL. But the American League, we can wind up with a three-team tie between Tampa, Cleveland, and Texas. And if they did that, there would be a double playoff to get in to the playoffs. That would be fascinating. You kind of want to root for it. Maybe they all wind up at 70 losses or all wind up at 71, whatever it could be. That'd but be, you kind of want some more baseball. You know what I mean? Like,
you know
that would
what?
Be really
you
crazy.
You do, but the problem with baseball is it's all about starting pitching, right? It's not like basketball where you could just hoop it up the next day. Like, you're at a complete disadvantage the next game because you burnt a starter. So
It's
interesting. It'd be fun to see, but I just feel like that team would be at such a disadvantage when they start the real playoffs on Thursday. If they had to go to a one-game playoff on Wednesday and then another one, I mean, on Monday, and then another
Monday,
one on Thursday,
yeah.
And then start a series on Thursday.
Well, you got to believe, I believe Tampa's probably going to make it. Cleveland's won 7 in a row. They had a big win. Texas last night with a walk-off homer. That was dramatic. They've been struggling as of late and seeming to hold on and pull it together. What do you think is going to happen? I mean, Cleveland's playing the Twins. Texas is playing the Angels. Well, you know, who's going to play spoiler and ruin, you know, one of these teams and Tampa plays Toronto? Who do you think will be the two teams out of the three that make it in the American League?
I think it's going to be Cleveland and Tampa Bay. For a while, I thought it was Texas. I said Texas. They'll pull it together. But no, I got to go with Terry Francona.
Cleveland.
I gotta go with Francona and the boys.
How about Giambi the other night with that homer? Oh, was that like 42 years old? He did it for the old guys. Giambi,
you know,
the ex-A's, the ex-Yankees.
Apparently, he's gonna be a manager like as soon as he wants to be. So like Walt Weiss got the job out in Colorado. Mm. Jason Giambi apparently is thought of that highly that he could be a manager within a year or two after he retires.
Yeah, he was always known as a smart player. First basemen tend to be, you know, some good field generals. Look at Mattingly, almost got fired. He's pulling it together at the Dodgers. So I could see that. And I agree with you. I think it's going to be Tampa and Cleveland. I just think, you know, hey, the Angels are going to be like, yeah, we'd like to play spoiler. And, you know, they're going to give Texas a rough time. But look, all they got to do is, you know, win one or two, and then Texas is done if Cleveland can, you know, go ahead and at least win one or two. So you got to believe that you know, the teams that are, you know, they're all one up on each other. So Tampa one up, Cleveland one up on Texas, that will be it. And hey, you know, Monday we'll be able to, you know, hopefully everything will be set and we could, you know, give you a little baseball playoff preview. But are you ready to talk about some college football?
So
this
Saturday
is a big weekend.
It really is. When was the last time you remember four top 25 teams going at it? So it's big time. Pigskin is in full effect. Just like it was, we only had one top 25 game last weekend. We got four of them this weekend.
And four good ones. It's not like, you know, there's no bum games.
Yeah.
Right. So you got the LSU at Georgia, 6-9. You got Oklahoma,
Notre Dame, yeah.
At Notre Dame, 12-22. Then you got
Mississippi, Alabama,
Ole Miss, 21-1 at number one, and then Wisconsin, 23 at number four, Ohio State. So let's start in the SEC. Let's look at LSU and Georgia, and I'll let you take it away. What do you think about this game and the poor Georgia Bulldogs with got to be one of the toughest schedules ever. I mean, gosh.
Well, they said that it's the fourth time in BCS history that a team has to play three top 10 opponents in their first four games.
Wow.
So Georgia is just, oof. So you know what?
At least two of them are at home. So that's a big help.
They haven't played in a couple years. The last time they played was in 2011 in the SEC championship game. Zach Mettenberger was only a third-string quarterback, so he didn't actually play in that game. So he doesn't really remember, you know, what it's like to be on the field in that type of situation. And again, I'm going back to my conspiracy theory. No, it's not a conspiracy theory, that the SEC is going to beat up on each other. So I think that Georgia, who lost to an ACC team, right, they lost to Clemson, but they beat South Carolina, I think they're going to pull this off. And they're going to throw the monkey wrench in the program. I think at home, in Athens, they're going to put it together. I think that we talked a lot about Gurley. We talked about Murray.
I was going to say, is that a lot of Gurley you like?
Oh, yeah. No, Gurley's nice. And Aaron Murray, I think he steps up, and I think he has a better game than Mettenberger. Hill can tote the rock, too, for LSU. Don't kid yourself. He's having just as good a season as Gurley is. Maybe even a little better.
350 yards.
A couple more touchdowns. So they've got to really clamp down also on Beckham. But I have
a feeling
that Georgia's going to pull this out. It's going to be a close game. I think it might even be a shootout. But, again, I have a feeling that home field advantage, when these teams are that close, if this
that
game
home cooking.
Were in Baton Rouge, I think I might call it differently. But because this game is in Athens, I like Georgia. I like Georgia to go to 3-1 and LSU to fall to 4-1.
All right. What's the score? Give me a score.
Oh, you know I don't like giving scores, but I will give you a score. I like this game, 31-27 Georgia.
Okay. Before I break it down, I was going to say, listen, Ray should not be shy about giving scores because you daggone near had it almost to the exact, I think, with that Bengals and Packer game. We were both close, but I had the Packers and you had the Bengals. What did you say, like 34-31 and it was 34-30 or something? So you had the score pretty good there. I got to give you your props. So I like what you said about this game. I think you're right on it. My only thing is I just have a funny feeling that it's time for Mettenberger to shine. And I feel like no better way to shine on national television, SEC, you're number 6 against, on the road, number 9, Georgia, for you at 3 o'clock Eastern to show up and show the world that, you know what, I'm the real deal. That, you know, I can maybe one day play at the next level, that I'm better and just as good as Murray. And it's time for me to get some respect in this conference. I think that LSU's defense might be underrated. I think maybe they hold Gurley to just maybe 100 or under 100 yards. And I think for some reason, I'm thinking LSU somehow pulls it out and they win on the road 30-27.
Okay.
So I'm going to sort of go with I'm going with the road dogs. I'm going with LSU.
Oof. Okay. Well, let's stick in the SEC and talk about the number one Alabama Crimson Tide hosting Ole Miss. So what do you think about that?
I got to be honest with you. I have Bama doing their thing and winning the whole thing. This game concerns me. And the only reason why I say it will is I like Ole Miss's secondary. I like their defense. I think they've got some talent, the defensive line. I also like Scott at the running back, but I like Wallace. I think Wallace is at a place where he wants to stand out as a quarterback. I mean, the guy's been playing just as good as anybody in the country or just as good as anybody in the conference. And I think that Ole Miss is going to give Alabama the scare that Texas A&M was supposed to. So I think Alabama is going to have to come from behind at some point, and I think McCarron is going to prove that he could be a Heisman Trophy candidate, not just from, you know, stats are decent, 702 yards, 6 touchdowns, but from just the veteran leadership, because Bama's going to win all their games. So I have Alabama winning a close one, 28-27, Roll Tide. and they sweat. And I mean, sweat this one out.
So here's the thing with Alabama. I don't think you want to be the team after Alabama plays a bad game. And even though Coach Saban talked him up and said we played a good game and we had a great opponent, he got into them this week in practice. They let up so many yards and so many points to A&M that I got to believe that the fix is on in terms of the defense. And I know that Nick Saban got that Alabama defensive squad playing much better this week in practice. And I think they're going to take it out on Wallace and Jeff Scott and Ingram and that two-headed monster there with Scott and Wallace. I don't think they'll be able to run the ball. So once you stop running the ball, then you put the hands, you make Wallace become a passer. And
he's not bad, though. Pretty decent.
He's not bad.
Kid, you know?
He's not bad. Hasn't thrown a pick this year yet. And, you know, you could argue is having just as good a year as A.J. McCarron. But I don't know. I like Alabama to bounce back, and I like them to bounce back big. So I think they got the scare so far. I think it'll take a monster performance to beat them. And I don't think that Ole Miss has a monster performance, right? Michael Orr isn't walking through the door with Eli Manning. So I like Alabama to take out their frustrations. I like them to win something like 31-17.
Okay. Speaking of that, I don't know if you saw on ESPN the SEC story with the book of Manning. It was great. And, it just brought me back because we both grew up with Archie Manning. And, you know, I remember having his football card for, you know, you young kids out there that are listening, you know, Ray and I used to get them baseball and football cards. But Archie Manning was incredible at Ole Miss, and his story was incredible. I didn't know that his father took his life and just how he bounced back and, you know, his big game in the Sugar Bowl and just, you know, his whole story. Because I remember him at the Saints, and it was fascinating to see, you know, Cooper and his story and how, you know, he got sick. And so, hey, look, the Mannings are definitely like probably the first family of football. So that's a good one and a must-see. And 30 for 30 starts back up on ESPN. So, you know, got to give them some love and props to watch that because that's always fun. So let's move on. This one's fascinating. Number 14, Oklahoma, and number 22, Notre Dame. I've gone back and forth on this one. I think for me, the reason why I was uneasy about it was because I was thinking, okay, you know what? Notre Dame is I don't know if they deserve their ranking. I got to be honest. I think Tommy Reese is too inconsistent for me. You know, I don't love how he quarterbacks the team. And I think, you know, it depends if, you know, McDaniel could get going. You know, they get it to their receivers. But what I'm noticing is that without Teau and some of the other guys that have graduated, the offensive line is not as impressive. And their linebackers, the secondary is not overly great. I thought Gardner of Michigan took them apart pretty easily. And when he had to get a big score, they just marched down the field on them. I actually think Oklahoma, Clay is going to run and run well on them. But I think the question is, you know, does Bell do well for Oklahoma? Can he sort of be the big-time quarterback, you know, like they had with Bradford or Landry Jones? And I think the answer is yes. I think Oklahoma can do enough on the road, and I think their defense is a little bit better than, you know, what Tommy Reese, and I think they can turn them over. So I think for me, at 3-1, Notre Dame falls down, probably drops out of the top 25. And even though they're idle this week, we play Florida State next weekend with Georgia Tech losing, and we'll see what happens in Michigan State. I think my Terps can move into the top 25 and set up a ranked opponent matchup next week when we play against Florida State to upset them and go 5-0. But I don't want to get ahead of myself. I'll take 3-0 Oklahoma over Notre Dame, 27-23. The Sooners.
All right. So
Sooners, baby.
I like the outcome. I think that's the right outcome. I think Oklahoma is putting up big numbers. They're averaging almost 500 yards on offense.
Yeah.
And Blake Bell had a great game. I think it was 27 for 37 for over 400 yards and four touchdowns against Tulsa. Now, granted, it was Tulsa, but
yeah,
it was you know, he it was supposed to be Trevor Knight's job, but then Bell took over. So the bottom line is Oklahoma can move the ball. Now, for Notre Dame, I think it's all about balance for them. And they've got to run the ball because, you know, they've got Daniels and Jones on the wings who can both catch the touchdowns. Even though Tommy Rees isn't great, I think he's good enough. I think that if you gave them a running game and if they could run and balance, you know, run a balanced offense, I think Notre Dame would be tough. But I don't know, and you'd want to slow the game down a little bit, take a few possessions away potentially from the more high powered Oklahoma offense. I just don't think they can do that. I don't think they'll be able to run effectively, and so to me they're going to stall. They're going to kick a few field goals. Notre Dame will, and I think Oklahoma's going to score some touchdowns. So I like Oklahoma in this game, 24-17.
Okay, so we both like Oklahoma. You just like them a little bit more than me. And now, our last ranked game, I'll let you go first. Wisconsin. Who got jerked at Ohio State, 23-4. I mean, what's going to happen?
Who's quarterbacking?
Yeah.
Who's quarterback?
I know. Is it Miller? Is it Guyton?
It's going to be Braxton Miller.
I think he's more pure in the sense of the versatility, but I think Guyton, he can throw it all over the field. You got to say, I mean, lesser competition, but he the mechanics and everything, he's exciting. Guyton is pretty good.
No, he is, and I think that you can't make a bad decision. You just have to make a decision. You know
right.
what I mean? You just have to go with one of them and let the chips fall where they may. But I like Ohio State. I think that they're a team that can definitely move the ball. I think that they've got, we talked about this in our preview show, with their a little bit of their youth and inexperience in their front seven. They're allowing 115 yards on the ground, and they have to stop Wisconsin's running attack. I think Wisconsin's averaging almost 350 yards a game on the ground. So,
well, they got the three-headed monster, Wisconsin.
Yeah. Melvin Gordon's got 625 yards from scrimmage and seven touchdowns. So,
yeah.
You know, you add to that White and Clement. These guys, I mean, Wisconsin can move the ball, and they can move the ball on the ground. So this is going to be no easy task. I just think at the end, whether it's Guyton or Miller, they'll come down and they'll drive the ball down the field for a game-winning field goal. I think this is going to be that close. I think it's going to be a total nail-biter. But I like Ohio State at home at the Horseshoe, 24-23 Buckeyes.
It's so funny when you said that. You know what it made me realize? That, like, we got to get some of the fellas together, and we got to go see a game at Ohio State. You know, and I know it's a tough ticket, Ohio State, but even to see Michigan at Ohio.
6,000 people, we got to get a ticket somewhere.
No, I'm not saying that. But, like, look, if we go see, not at Wisconsin, I'm talking about trying to go see, like, if you're going to go to see a college football game, you want to go to see, like, Ohio State. Michigan at Ohio State or Ohio State at Michigan. So I'm just saying, like, that's one of those, you know, bucket list things that, you know, I've seen major college football. Being at Maryland in 93, I saw Charlie Ward of Florida State come to Maryland. When you want to talk about incredible, I mean, and ladies and gentlemen, I don't know if you know, but Charlie Ward was incredible in college at quarterback. You know,
I thought he was a basketball player.
Oh, yeah, no, this guy, he was a quarterback, Charlie Ward. He, you know, they kind of told him, like, he couldn't play. Yeah, go to YouTube, ladies and gentlemen. Go to YouTube. Check out Charlie Ward of Florida State. Not the point guard of the Knicks, but the Charlie Ward quarterback. Woo! So, okay, look, I mean, all jokes aside, I feel what you're saying. And to me, it's hard to find a way that Wisconsin could keep up scoring with Ohio State. We saw Wisconsin sort of go back and forth with Arizona State and wind up losing because, you know, the referees possibly. I just think Ohio State, they're tough. I mean, this 4-0 and 3-0 at home, but the way that, you know, they're playing with the starting quarterback, the backup quarterback, it doesn't matter. They've got talent at the skills positions. Their defense is probably a little underrated. I think Urban Meyer has recruited really well. I love Hall at running back. I think he's a stud. You know, they got Smith. And to me, I think the problem is whether it's Guyton or it's Miller, and he said he might use both. But look, Guyton in, what, two games has thrown 664 yards? He's no slouch. And Braxton Miller, with running and passing, he's kind of unstoppable. I say all this to say that I think it's going to be something like 34-21, Ohio State.
Wow.
I mean, I just don't know if Gordon can you know, break 100 yards on these guys. And look, Gordon's a stud. 7 touchdowns, 600, basically almost 30 yards, 624 yards, 63 carries. I mean, 53 carries. He's a horse. But I don't love the quarterback. I got to go 34-21. Ohio State, baby. You know, it's the Big Ten. Let me ask you a question. Before we, you know, leave college football and you know, we had so much conversation with it and over the, you know, the shows, and people could go back, I guess it's what, August 23rd, and listen to the preview with Charles Davis where he ranked the conferences. So I'm going to ask you this. So far, and this is week 5 in college football, SEC probably still number one, but I think a close second would have to be the Pac-12. And do you think that they are a lot better than the Big Ten, or just a little bit? Like, how are you thinking the Big Ten ranks when you saw UCLA go to Nebraska and smack them?
Yeah, I think they're better than the Big Ten because they're two top teams. They got two Ohio States, right? The Big Ten only has one Ohio State. And they've got Stanford and Oregon. Now, obviously, they're going to play each other. One of them is going to lose. But they've got two teams that are legit national championship contenders, whereas the Big Ten has one. And then the rest of the teams are okay, right? Wisconsin's a good team. Michigan, you know, hasn't played well, but they're a decent team. But I think that up and down, the Pac-10 or Pac-12 has got more. Not only they're higher at the top end, but they've got more teams that could potentially compete for legitimate, you know, top 25 recognition. So I like the Pac-12 as the second best conference for sure.
Yeah, no, you're right, and it's interesting because, you know, give Charles credit. Some of these teams that he mentioned on our show, sort of like a Washington and even the Baylor, UCLA, but that Pac-12, when you look at them, even when you go far down, even the Washington State, Washington, Cal, these teams are pretty good. And our Oregon State and Arizona State are tough, you know, besides the USC, UCLA, and Stanford and Oregon. It's really a deep conference. And you almost want to see, without question, Stanford-Oregon winner. Like I was saying, versus Bama, you know, you really want to see that because I think that, you know, Stanford and Oregon could be ready. So, you know, why don't we this is what I really want to do. Why don't we take a hot little break and come back and talk the NFL Week 4, Ray and Tay.
NFL Week 4. I mean, after this week, the regular season is going to be a quarter over. That's crazy. Although it does go 17 weeks technically because each team gets a bye. And we're starting the byes this week. So everybody in fantasy, recognize the schedule.
Let them know.
And check out the byes. So if you don't know, make sure your guys are not on bye. So let me read off to you the teams that are on bye so there's no mistaking here.
Break it down.
This week there's only two teams. but they're two, you know, high profile from a fantasy perspective, certainly at the quarterback position. So you got Green Bay and Carolina. So make sure that Aaron Rodgers and Cam Newton and Jordy Nelson and Brandon LaFell and Steve Smith, he's hurt. Don't be playing him anyway. Make sure all these guys
who,
are
who's
off.
Hurt?
Who
are you talking about? Who's
Steve
hurt?
Smith.
Oh,
Steve Smith
in
Carolina.
What happened?
He got banged up a little bit last
night. That's right. That's right. I'm sleeping on that because that's how I lost in our real bowl league to Sammy. He got knocked out first, second quarter. And I almost won if Santonio Holmes didn't get that touchdown with the Bills defense. But, hey, that's the way fantasy works, ladies and gentlemen. Shout out to Sammy in our league. The Size Disciples got the victory on Taylor May. But go ahead. It hurts. Aaron Rodgers, Franklin, Eddie Lacy, they're all gone. James Jones, Jermichael Finley. So, you know, check your spots, your rosters. Let's talk about it last night, Ray. We got to salute. The Niners woke up 2-2. They went big over the Rams, 35-11. Tell us what you think. Thursday Night Football, NFL Network.
So, to me, this game went according to schedule, right? The better team won. Although last year, St. Louis played San Francisco very well. So it wasn't like... It wasn't like this team was scared of San Francisco. I just think San Francisco is that much
better. They had the
man
last year. But last year was different. Be honest. You got to give him his love. They had Steven Jackson. Maybe one of the most underrated running backs in NFL history.
Underrated.
Definitely.
Is right. He's not in the category of a Marshall Faulk. He's not that dynamic. But you know what? For a big back, he can do it all. I mean, he can catch the ball out of the backfield. He can run. He can pick up, help out in the pass protection. That was the big loss. And Sam Bradford has nobody to throw to. You know, we talked about this off-air a little bit, but Pettis and Givens and even Cook, my guy, they're all okay. But nobody's the number
Austin,
one receiver.
Yeah.
And Tavon Austin is still only 5'8", and he's still a rookie. And so we don't know if these guys will ever develop, but certainly Sam Bradford has never thrown to a top elite-level receiver. So
the best
he's
had is Brandon Lloyd for one season.
And Brandon Lloyd's not even in the NFL. So Brandon Lloyd had one good year in Denver. One good year, he had a rocky start in San Francisco. Then he had one good year in Denver, one good year in St. Louis. Couldn't even catch back on with his old offensive coordinator, Josh, don't call me Ralph McDaniels. Shout out to everybody who remembers Uncle Ralph.
Video music box.
But my question then is, all right, so to me, this is San Francisco, right? I said don't panic, no worries. San Francisco, even without Patrick Willis and even without Crabtree and even with a Vernon Davis coming off of injury, you know, they're fine. They're fine.
Yeah.
The question is, are they going to win, 11, 12, or 13 games? That's the only question you have with San Francisco. And are they going to have to play a road game? That's the only question. They're fine. I don't even think you need to talk much about San Francisco. The question for me is St. Louis. And what do they do? I mean, is Sam Bradford the answer? Do you start thinking about a new quarterback in St. Louis? Do you feel like he's had his chance? Or do you feel like you still don't know because he hasn't had the tools around him?
I'm going to tell you right off the bat, you give him a chance. I think he's fine. I think, yes, he's sort of not stretching it down the field. He's not elusive, but he does have that cannon. I think you have to sort of get another, whether right guard or right tackle that's solid, build up the right side of the line. He needs a real running back. I think Isaiah Pede and Darrell Richardson, at best, are both twos. Neither one is a number one back. So since you lost Steven Jackson, you got to replace him and get somebody. I don't know, who you could get. If you could try to steal away from Tampa, Doug Martin, or if you could try to maybe say, you guys got Trent Richardson, give us Bradshaw, something. You've got to do something. But you've got to get help. The reality is Givens, Quick, Pettis, and Austin, at best out of any of them, you'll get a number two receiver. They really are more like twos and threes. So you have to give him a big time, option to throw to. So I think this year in the draft, you know, your first two picks, you got to be looking, or first three picks, you got to look all offense and maybe free agency. So you're looking offensive line, wide receiver, and running back because he needs help. And so I think the Rams will be fine. I think Jeff Fisher has built up a great secondary. He's drafted well. You like their defensive line. Quinn and Long are a beast. They're going to be good. So it's going to be a year or two away in terms of trying to win in that division, though, because the Niners, as you saw, once Vernon Davis came back, he opened up the field for Anquan Boldin.
Niners and Seahawks aren't going anywhere.
Yeah, and Frank Gore just was a man, and offensive line was, this is what they needed to do against the Colts and Seahawks. You pound the ball, and don't get so cutesy and just, be realistic, right? Be like Alex Smith. Let Kaepernick throw, he threw for 100 and change, but no interceptions. Be a game manager, because the Niners are built that way. Maybe week 13, 14, Crabtree comes back, and then you could be more explosive offensively, and maybe Manningham comes back. And then you've got Manningham, Boldin, Crabtree, and Davis, and then you're ready to go win a Super Bowl. But for now, Bradshaw's fine. Get him help. The Niners are fine. Hey, congrats to them. You tip your hat. They're 2-2. But guess what? They still got to, keep it going, because it is about seeding. You don't want to go to, Seattle in the playoffs, because that's a serious home field advantage, as we all seen. So let's move on to the next game and to the rest of the weekend. And I guess first off the bat, we're looking, at Chicago. Chicago at Detroit, Rante, we tip our hat. I was going to say the AFC Norris. Our wishes, condolences go out to Chris Berman. He lost his father, James Berman. Chris Berman is someone we grew up with ESPN and remember him on the field, the candlestick when Dwight Clark caught the pass from Joe Montana and the Niners upset the Cowboys. And Chris Berman has given all of us in the sports world tons of great memories, whether it's baseball or football or just SportsCenter, whatever it is.
Remember George, yep. Taco Bell? Those names. Where are those names?
Yeah, he's the best with the nickname. So, I'm sure, the family's going through it. And, so we send our best regards and love. So on to this game. I'm excited because I think the Bears are in a place where they're going to get another win, and they're going to win in the division on the road. I think replacing Nick Burleson is going to be hard. The pizza fell in the car, and he broke his arm, and he's out 6 to 8 weeks. So that means your boy Broyles has got to step up. They brought in, Hawkins and another receiver. They're trying to see who they're going to sign. I don't know if they signed anybody. But the reality is Trestman's got them going. Marshall, Bennett, Forte, Cutler, the defense is playing tough. They're not really missing Urlacher, and it's not a knock on him. He was great, but, they probably got a little younger, a little faster. Same thing with the Ravens, maybe without Ray Lewis. So I think this game comes down to what can Reggie Bush do, him and Joique Bell on that Bears. I think that they can move the ball. Calvin Johnson can do well, but I think Stafford, he'll throw some interceptions, and I think that's the reality of it. So I look at the Bears staying undefeated. They took care of my Steelers last week, and I think they go to Detroit and they fight out a gritty win, 26-24, Bears over the Lions.
Wow. So I think that Detroit is playing for some pride. They're 2-1. They've been smacked around. They're the one team that Jay Cutler owns in that division. I think he's like 12-1 against them or something like that. But I do think Chicago is ready to get upset. I like Detroit at home. I think they're a different team at home. I think the crowd noise, I think the speed on the turf, their defensive line can get into Jay Cutler's face, and I think Jay Cutler is going to make a couple mistakes. I like Joique Bell, and I like Reggie Bush, and if Reggie's healthy, then he's a tough matchup, especially at home on turf with the crowd noise and with the tempo and the speed of the field. Megatron is Megatron. They do have to figure out who to get on the other side of him. Ryan Broyles is probably not ready just because
Pettigrew's got to wake up, right?
blown ACL. Pettigrew was the man. We're waiting for him to reclaim his man status. But I think that in a shootout, I think Detroit wins this game for pride, and they go to 3-1, and Chicago drops to 3-1. I'm like Detroit 31-27 over the Bears.
31-27. Oof. Okay. So you're like in big fantasy days all over the board.
Oh yeah, I'm rooting for fantasy, baby.
Listen, with Ray, ladies and gentlemen, it all comes back to fantasy, and you'll notice he, and who's on his roster. Hey, listen, I like that. You got to keep it real. So, okay, so next, what do we got next here?
Let's go with the Giants visiting
the
Kansas City Chiefs. So that's the zero-win Giants, so 0-3 against the 3-0 Chiefs.
Well, you know, I think what's fascinating about this is, like, they easily could be switched. It could be the reverse, 3-0 Giants and 0-3 Chiefs. But you know what? It's not. They've got a new voice, a new coach in Kansas City and in New York. Maybe they're getting a little tired of the same voice. And maybe they're just not hungry enough. And like we said in the beginning of the season, those injuries deal. Stevie Brown, you know, the secondary is a little older, and then losing Andre Brown, who was a good goal line back and more solid in terms of pounding it. He did it last year without Bradshaw. We saw him shine against, I think it was the Panthers on NFL Network last year. You know, everything in me wants to say, you know what, the Giants are ready to get off the snide. They're too talented. They're too good. Eli's not going to keep throwing these interceptions. But when I saw the Chiefs last week on Thursday Night Football, what they did to the Eagles and the way that their defense, whether it's, you know, Tamba Ali or it's Houston or you know, Eric Berry, I mean, who, you know, this team is now healthy.
And they've got
Andy Reid. And they're just excited, and they're playing inspired ball. And, you know, Jamaal Charles, I don't know if Pierre Paul and Jason and Tuck, if they can stop him. Ladies and gentlemen, I like the Giants, but the way Alex Smith is playing football and not turning it over, you know, I got to be honest, I think the Kansas City Chiefs are going to win. I got the Chiefs winning this game real close, 21-20.
Wow. So
I just think they play smart football.
I think the Chiefs play smart football. I think the way that the Giants win is they try to get the Chiefs in a shootout and maybe create some turnover opportunities. First, you got to stop Jamaal Charles, and then you have to make Alex Smith beat you and not game manage you. So I think there's a formula to beating Kansas City. Again, and maybe this is from speaking from the heart. Look, I'm not a Giant fan, but I can't see the Giants go 0-4. And there's no fantasy implications here. I don't have anybody on either. Well, one of my leagues I have Debo, but I'm sitting him down because he's so up and down. Dwayne Bowe, if you got him, good luck. For years he was one of the most inconsistent players. When he's great, and then he's terrible. But this game, I think the Giants score enough. I think the Giants go on 17 points in the second half. They finish with 24. I think that Cruz, Knicks, Myers, they got to find who's the consistent running game that they need. Maybe it's by committee. Maybe Brandon Jacobs gives them a little spark. But against all odds, I think the Giants refuse to go 0-4.
Refuse to lose.
Here's your ticket. To go 24-20. So I like the Giants. I like the Giants 24-20 in Kansas City. I don't think Chiefs are dynamic enough, and I think that one critical turnover by Alex Smith and the Giants capitalize and score a fourth-quarter touchdown to win.
All right. Well, let's keep it moving. Seattle at Houston. This is big. This is, look, this is not them week one pulling out a close victory, 12-7 over the Panthers. This is at Houston. There's a potential Super Bowl preview. I'm sure somebody out there picked this, if not a lot of people. It comes down to this for me. Can Foster and Tate, or can one of them get 100 yards rushing, or the combination get like 150? Can they sort of have the, you know, hold the clock, no turnovers from Schaub, and will Andre Johnson be healthy? If so, maybe they can pull out a close one. But I'm tending to think that Seattle, ladies and gentlemen, is they're just ready. That this team, their corners are solid, the safeties, the defensive line's playing well. I think you're starting to see Sidney Rice wake up, Zach Miller, Golden Tate. You know, maybe you'll get something from this kid, Jermaine Kearse, Doug Baldwin. They're just good enough. And I don't love the Texans secondary. So I'm going to have to go with Russell Wilson on the road, pulling out actually a dogfight. I got them winning a low-scoring game, 17-14 Seahawks at the Texans.
Wow. So I think Houston's going to win this game. I think they were beat up by Baltimore. I think they have pride.
Oh, God,
their window for winning might be closing. So this might be the last year where the gang is all together because Ben Tate's going to go be a starting running back somewhere. I think
maybe
they'll be able
to
manage. I think they'll be able to manage the clock and get first downs and matriculate the ball up the field. They look like they found a trio in obviously Andre Johnson, Owen Daniels, and Tompkins. They've got
Hopkins,
enough offense and enough Matt Schaub where if they can hold down and not make a critical turnover, I think they win. I think they win a close game, 27-24. I don't think Seattle's explosive enough at this point in the season. So 27-24 Houston.
All right, real quick, Philly at Denver, another 3-0 team. This could get ugly. I think Philly could score. They could put up 24 points. Denver, you know, Champ Bailey might come back, and their secondary, you know, the whole team's starting to play better without Von Miller, and, you know, he'll be back eventually. But as Denver starts to get healthy, and it's the second week playing without Clady, and they're just a well-oiled machine, and Julius Thomas, the bright, you know, new shiny toy for Manning in the tight end, and Decker gets it 1 week, Demarius, Wes Welker. I think, yeah, the Eagles get their 24, but I think Denver puts up 34. They win by 10. 34-24, Peyton Manning, 4-0.
Wow, I agree. I think Denver wins 34-30. I think both of these teams can score. I think that Chip Kelly will be able to find some weaknesses in that Denver defense, but Denver ultimately wins on a last. You know, they have the ball last. They win 34-30.
So we've got Sunday night. The New England Patriots, and they might actually start Gronkowski, going to the Atlanta Falcons. 3-0 against 1-2. Now, the Falcons, they can't afford. Look, the Saints are at home Monday night against the Dolphins. Good game, but they're at home. They could wind up going 4-0. And the Falcons don't want to go down to 1-3. This is a team with pride like the Niners. And the Patriots, yeah, Gronk might come back, but they're still out of sync. They're not playing well. They're not – I don't know if Ridley's getting it together, what's going on. I think Atlanta might be ready. I think on Sunday night, the momentum, the crowd, I think OC, you know, OC might get to Brady. For some reason, I just feel like it's time. The Patriots are playing a better opponent, and I think Snelling and Jacquez proved that they can move the ball and they can run and catch it without Steven Jackson. I think the Falcons win a nice battle, Matty Ice against Brady, 28-24, Falcons. Sunday night football win.
I like the Falcons to win this game 30-27. Same concept. Falcons can score. New England can score. New England's got some issues with their receiving core. I think they're a work in progress. I think that Atlanta runs away with the game, and then New England mounts a huge comeback, but they fall a little short. So I like Atlanta to win and go 2-2, 30-27.
All right, so now we get into a little bit of the fantasy talk, and we talk about, you know, your must-starts or your sleepers, and then our sort of mix it in with our segment, You're Not Ready. I'm going to give you a couple guys. I think, first of all, you know, just looking at the starts, I think Phillip Rivers and Romo in that game, you could start both of those guys. I think it's going to be a light-up over there in San Diego, so I like them. I think, obviously, you know, I think my Steelers, Big Ben, is going to rip up Minnesota, and you could start the Steelers defense against Matt Cassel, Antonio Brown, and Le'Veon Bell. I think he's going to do good, and I'm looking forward to that. And then I'm just going to go right into it. For me, my You're Not Ready is in the game with Tennessee Titans and the New York Jets. I got a young man by the name of Bilal Powell, who is starting at running back for the Jets. He's a beast. He got busy last week, and I think when he goes into Tennessee, he's going to lead the 2-1 Jets over the 2-1 Patriots. I look for Powell to, you know, probably, look, this guy's got 52 carries, 226 yards. I think he puts up like a 125 and a touchdown, get a second touchdown. Geno Smith plays better. And I think Powell is the guy that you are not ready for. Jets win 3-1, the Stars of New York, 23-20, Powell and the Jets over the Titans.
I'm going to give you a You're Not Ready, and he's a young buck, Mike Glennon, the guy who took over in Tampa Bay for Josh Freeman, who was a couple of years ago a young Ron stud, and we thought that he was going to be the next future of the big, strong, young quarterback with the big arm out of K-State. I like Mike Glennon to take over a team, not do too much. I don't think he needs to put up 400 yards. He's got Vincent Jackson. He's got Mike Williams. He's got Doug Wilson around him. And remember, that Tampa Bay team, they're only averaging 11 points a game. But they're only giving up 19. So they're doing fine on defense. So if they can hold Arizona to 19, 20 points, I think my man Mike Glennon leads them to victory, throws for 225, a couple of touchdowns, and gets a victory 24-20. So my man,
wow,
the rookie quarterback, the Wally Pitt of quarterbacks, takes over in Tampa Bay and leads the Bucks.
And what happens to Josh Freeman? I mean, we didn't really get into it. He gets benched. Does he get traded? He wants to get traded. I think
it's
hard to
trade a quarterback mid-season unless there's an injury because of the whole training camp. You're not going to trade for a backup. So
And Terrell Pryor's healthy for the Raiders. Just for people to know, for fantasy, he practiced and passed the concussion test. I guess he's got to pass a final one on Sunday. But looks like he'll play, and Ray Rice will play this week. So, I mean, do you think someone would want Josh Freeman, or is he just a notch above Sanchez?
I think he gets one more chance to be a starting quarterback. I think he's better than the Henny, Gabbert, Sanchez, Ponder crew.
So in Jacksonville, maybe you could see him.
He's a starting quarterback. At least he gets one more chance. He may not get it this year, but next year he'll be the starting quarterback on one of those four teams.
All right, that's fair. I mean, listen, hey. You know, it's going to be fun. I mean, I think, you might be right. This Glennon guy, he might just need his chance. And Freeman's, 48% passer rate, completion rating. People can't go with that. His percentage is bad. And I think
not in your fourth or fifth year. I mean, you're expected to get better every year. You can't have this.
But just like Frank Gore, I think it's time for Tampa to rely on Doug Martin. Give him 25 carries, couple screen passes, let this guy get combined 200 yards and go pound, the Arizona Cardinals. So, hey, listen, another great show. I think we will have a lot to talk about Monday morning. We'll have, another one of our classic segments. We'll get, more into the baseball with the playoffs, and we'll talk all about the NFL and the college. It's going to be fun. It's going to be exciting. I think your Cowboys might go to San Diego and get a W, man. So, we got to, big up your Cowboys. I think they're going to go and do their thing. And my Steelers will win in London over the Vikings in the battle of the 0-3 teams. I got my Steelers winning.
Well, they got no Christian Ponder.
Yeah,
they got no Christian
Matt Cassel's quarterback.
So all you got to do is stop Adrian, and you should be all right.
Yeah. All right, man. Listen, another great show. We'll see you on Monday. And thanks for listening and talking sports with friends.
Have a great weekend. We're
out. Ray and Tate today. We're out.